Today on Ag News Daily.
Now their financial ministers threatened to quit. Like, it's a whole bunch of, like, Real Housewife style economic drama. And as a result, you know, you're seeing the Real weaken, which in history would say that the farmer becomes a more aggressive seller.
Well, welcome back, listeners and viewers, to the weekly edition of the Ag News Daily Show. I feel like I should say good morning, Delaney.
Well, it's morning when we record, but not morning when this gets released for our listeners and viewers.
Kind of get up before those early headlines so our listeners have those at their disposal.
That's right. That's a good way to put it.
And the weather never sleeps. Man, we're just full of one-liners today. An intense heat wave has descended upon a large portion of the Corn Belt as planting season has come to a close, with temperatures racing past 90 degrees Fahrenheit and sporadic rain over the past week. Corn conditions in the latest crop progress report were again on the decline. The short-term forecast has the National Weather Service's Climate Prediction Center for June 26th through July 2nd still with temperatures above average for most of the Corn Belt. From as far west as Colorado and Kansas to Pennsylvania and North Carolina as the two easternmost states in the belt, those temperatures will continue to be higher. Long-term projections from the Climate Prediction Center have also not changed for the Corn Belt, with above-average temperatures still in the cards for much of the area. Only portions of North Dakota, South Dakota, and Minnesota, Delaney, are excluded from that projection.
Well, that's right. And as you mentioned, we did see a pretty good decline, just a little decline here in crop progress report, Tanner. We don't have any more planting progress reports, I believe, because growers are pretty much done with that here. And some are in I think I've seen some B7, B8 stages this week for corn.
There was some early corn planted.
Yeah, but nonetheless, in the last week, U.S. corn and soybean conditions slightly declined, with 93% of the U.S. corn crop now emerged, showing 72% of that corn rated good to excellent, a 2-point decline from the week prior, but an improvement from where we were at this time in 2023. Soybean conditions also saw a decline of 2 points from the previous week, and were rated 70% good to excellent. Again, another improvement from 2023. The USDA reports 93% of soybean crop is planted, with 82% of the soybeans emerged ahead of the average pace. U.S. winter wheat is 94% headed, with several states reporting 100% of the crop headed. As they head into harvest season now, USDA reported that 9% of winter wheat is in good to excellent condition, 34% in fair condition, with no change from last week. 95% of spring wheat has emerged and conditions are rated 3% excellent, 48% good, and 37% fair.
That's not a very large number of excellent spring wheat, Lady.
It's really not.
Well, our friends at Red Star are here to bring us another update for this crop season. Let's get that agronomic update right now. Hey, listeners, it's time for a Red Star Daily Update. We've got two under our belt, time for the third one this growing season. My pleasure to have Brody and Ryan and Tom here, all from Red Star. We know, Ryan, you're the boss, and you've got a great team here that's been providing us some awesome tips this spring. Let's jump into what we might be scouting for as we get into the fields. Do you want to take that or do you want to pass it off to one of the guys?
I can start with it. So as we're looking cold, wet soils, we got to really start looking at our white mold, tar spot, your early season fungicides that they're going to affect us this year, probably more than ever. So, yeah.
That's great. Tom, as you're thinking about the areas that have started off the growing season much differently than we've seen in the past, what do we need to be looking for?
You know, having been to several of Fred Belo's meetings over the last 15 years, I think of one, the weather, stupid, and the weather's been crazy this year, and two is nitrogen. You know, as we look at corn and soybeans, actually beans use more nitrogen than corn, but we got to watch what's going on with nitrogen right now. You know, there's a lot of nitrogen in Iowa specifically gets put on the fall time or early spring. I think that's definitely something we got to watch here as we go forward.
That's right. And we're probably going to see some different diseases than what we've seen in the past due to the environment we've been in, Brody. So what are going to be some focuses?
Well, let's back up. You know, we talked about, you know, the cooler, wetter conditions, you know, creating pre-existing conditions, right? And so what are those pre-existing conditions then lead to insusceptibility? And, you know, tar spot we've talked about and seen, and, you know, our neighbors to the east have experienced some severe issues over the last 2, 3, 4 years as it continues to move west across the Corn Belt. And, you know, if we continue to stay wet, I would suspect that we're going to see that early. And so, you know, there's two ways to really combat that. You know, part of it might be we're past the point of return on some of this. And so we do just need to, you know, spray a fungicide. But the thing is, when you spray a fungicide, you close those stomatas. And your stomatas are your conductance to transpiration. And we've talked numerous times about transpiration, what drives everything. There's a very good chart that Iowa State and one of their ICM newsletters ties yield to transpiration. Higher amount of transpiration, higher the yield. And it's a very, very tight correlation. So we don't want to affect that transpiration either. And so can we improve the overall resistance to plant diseases earlier on in the growing season, even up to this point where we're at now with the use of calcium silicates that help fortify that plant cell wall that doesn't allow the fungus or, you know, the actual fungus to be able to penetrate the cell wall. Given like a fungicidal static, not saying it's going to give you control, it's just giving you better nutrition. And the reason that we want to wait until after tassel to spray fungicide is because our transpiration rates naturally drop. Because that plant is now translocating nutrients from inside the plant into grain fill instead of thinking it needs to bring up nutrition to be able to create more carbohydrates, store in the stalk, and then put that into grain fill.
I mean, when fungicides first come about 20 plus years ago, you know, one of them actually, you know, coined the phrase plant health. And they looked at the fungicide not because we had a ton of disease at that time, but because of what it did physiologically to the plant. You know, it helped it reduce stress. You know, it lowered just that overall stress for that plant. Well, we can do that with plant nutrition products, right? Like we're talking about. We've got products like SunFed. We've got products like Red Shield. We've got products like Elevate Plus that we can come in and help keep that plant healthy. Now, as, you know, diseases like tar spot and gray leaf spot come in, obviously we can't control those diseases nutritionally. That's when you come in and spray that fungicide. But, you know, the transpiration is such a big thing this year, Brody, because of all the moisture we have. We've just got to get it in the plant and out of the leaf. And so, yes, if you put a fungicide on too soon, you can sort of, you know, hurt that transpiration to where things can start to get bottlenecked up in that plant. So the plant health side of that is one thing. The disease side is another. Nutritionally, let's keep that plant healthy. Let's keep it driving towards high yield. And then let's come in late there, you know, R1, R2, and hit it with that fungicide.
Yep. And you know, that's going to lead into other things that we can do from a nutritional standpoint with amino acids, polypeptides, with the recess product to be able to slow respiration as well and help reallocate and translocate nutrients from the stock to the sink source, which is a year at that point.
Yeah, so. I look at it, Tanner, and I say, we just really have got to watch the rest of the growing season. You know, we got to do our tissue testing. We got to continue to watch how much rain are we continuing to get, because that's probably going to help drive what you're going to do. You know, if we stay wet, man, I'm going to go in there with, you know, 2 to 3 quarts of Elevate Plus and Novastar. And that's just going to be a big win for that corn plant because it needs nitrogen, it needs potash, and it needs those key amino acids, right, to keep those processes going. You know, if we stay cloudy, which we've had a lot of cloudy days, boom, we're going to hit it with what?
Sun-fed.
So again, I think it's one of those things where there's no cookie cutter approach.
Right.
And that's one of the things I really like about our Red Star team is that we're continuing to watch what's going on with the weather. We're evaluating the crop all the time. And we've got a very broad portfolio of products that have been designed to sort of help each specific thing that takes place in that crop. So we can, you know, hopefully address an issue or situation when it arises.
Well, Ryan, I'm looking at the fuel that we've got on the table here, and I'm excited to try some of this beer. But tell me what this is that everybody's been seeing sitting in front of us in the camera.
This is our house beer, Red Light Lager. So I bring the brains.
This is
my baby. So.
That's perfect. Well, if our listeners are curious about not only the advice that your team can give or what's sitting in front of us here on the table, what's the best way for them to reach out to you?
Sure. Look us up on Facebook, Twitter, redstarany.com or redstarbranded.com.
All right. Thanks again for another great tip, guys.
Thank you.
Thanks, Tanner.
Thanks to them again for another great segment. What else do we have for headlines, Delaney?
Well, Tanner, despite the recent progress of the 2024 Farm Bill, lawmakers aren't sounding too optimistic, hinting the passage of the full Farm Bill in 2024 is growing more unlikely. Another extension to the 2018 Farm Bill at the end of September remains the most likely outcome. Progress showed that there was passage of the House Agriculture Committee's version of the bill, as well as competing frameworks released in the Senate Agriculture Committee. However, Ag Committee Republicans have outlined their proposal, but do not believe it will be heading towards the Senate. Senate Ag Chairwoman Debbie Stabenow in Michigan does not think the House Ag Committee bill will pass the House and has the same mindset for the Senate bill. Stabenow has rejected parts of the GOP proposal due to the reduction in nutrition spending for programs such as SNAP and the removal of climate guardrails on Inflation Reduction Act funding. So far, only one step has been completed in the eight steps required for the Farm Bill to become a reality. There is some optimism that this summer will create momentum on both sides to create that framework, but only time will tell, Tanner.
Yeah, that seems like a long ways away from completion. If only step one has been completed.
Yeah, what's that math? You're a math wizard. What's that percentage?
Less than 15%, yes. In other news, Delaney, the EPA overstepped its authority with its so-called tailpipe rule that requires automakers to sharply reduce greenhouse gas emissions from their cars, pickup trucks, and other vehicles, according to the Renewable Fuels Association and the National Farmers Union in a lawsuit that they filed to the U.S. Appellate Court on Monday. It was the second lawsuit in only 4 days to challenge this regulation. Both lawsuits say that the EPA rule is biased toward electric vehicles and discourages the sale of cars and trucks that use liquid fuels. Roughly 35% of the U.S. corn crop is used in making ethanol, which makes this an important target. America's ethanol producers and farmers would be severely injured if the EPA's regulation were allowed to stand, said the RFA last week. The oil industry and the American Farm Bureau Federation and the National Corn Growers Association and, Delaney, six auto dealers filed this suit against the tailpipe rule in that U.S. appellate court for the District of Columbia. So a lot of people and companies and organizations aligning on that effort.
Well, Tanner, I've got to admit, this next story kind of came from TikTok because I saw a gentleman share this story and I dug a little deeper. But Idaho tried to ban irrigators for farmers to use, both in groundwater irrigators and surface water irrigators. But they've now completed a deal with the state to save 330,000 acres of Idaho farmland that could have created an economic crisis for the state. A mitigation agreement for 2024, brokered by Governor Brad Little and Lieutenant Governor Scott Bedke, has been signed by all parties and submitted to the Idaho Department of Water Resources for approval. Once approved, the IDWR will lift restrictions for all nine groundwater districts that are used for irrigation from the Eastern Snake Plain Aquifer. This agreement now allows farmers to continue growing crops in 2024, but does not fix the underlying issues with Idaho's management of that water aquifer. Groundwater districts are putting trust in the state to create and implement a new management plan before the 2025 growing season, Tanner, but was watching this TikTok video. It was obviously lots of wheat is produced there, barley, and of course, my favorite food, potatoes in the state of Iowa.
I was wondering if you were going to say potatoes. Well, if you're going to come to the Farm Progress Show this year, you may have the opportunity to tour Landis's new facility. Landis Cooperative is celebrating the grand opening of their new 75,000-square-foot fertilizer production distribution facility in Boone, Iowa. According to the cooperative, the $15 million sustainable fertilizer facility will produce an 8200 slow-release ammonium nitrate product that is less expensive and as efficient as conventional ammonium nitrate. Landis isn't diving headfirst into this deep, murky water of domestic fertilizer production by itself. The cooperative has partnered up with the green ammonia startup Talus Ag on the Boone Project, Talus Ag's Talus 10 system. The largest system the company currently offers creates fertilizer anywhere that can be hosted by a facility. In 2025, the company plans to install another 10 Talus 10 systems. Farmers that make the switch to this green ammonia will have much to gain, even beyond the advantages of having an inexpensive local source of nitrogen for that production to be available on demand right here in the heart of rural America. If you use this basic carbon-free nitrogen fertilizer, the research, Delaney, shows that this can help reduce a CI score for corn by up to 25 to 30%. So big news there.
Yeah, and it was interesting kind of seeing this come to fruition. We talked with EBT earlier this year, and now we're seeing it unveil at Farm Progress Show this year. But for today's market segment conversation, Tanner, I thought it might be more appropriate to have an actual market analyst on the show. We're going to be joined today by Angie Setzer of Consus Ag. Welcome to the show. It's good to have you on the new video version and to see you.
Right. I'm not so sure after this week it's good for anyone to see me, but I'm glad to be here.
Well, we're excited to talk to you and dig into the bloodbath that was the grain markets, especially on Thursday after we had holiday closed session on Wednesday for Juneteenth. What was going on in the markets on Thursday?
To be completely honest, I've had so many people ask me, and I couldn't tell you. The only thing that I could really kind of contribute it to is the continuation of the belief that the weather is good, like rain makes grain, right? And no one really is acknowledging some of the areas of concern that we have, not only here in the U.S., but around the world that I'm paying attention to. I feel like, you know, right now the path of least resistance for a lot of the folks out there, at least for the market, is lower, or at least trend, you know, range bound. Like, we've been stuck in this range for a while. And so yesterday was really just trying to test the downside of that range. We have option expiration today on Friday, which tends to have a little bit to do with it. We've seen over the last few months that we get this sort of real big push as we head into option expiration and delivery. And so I feel like it was just like, it's worked. It's worked so far. It's not broken. Let's see what we can do today. And the absence of natural participants in the market, the buyers and the sellers, like, they're there, but they're not really engaged, just kind of exacerbated the sell-off and all that we saw from it.
So as we talk corn specifically and we look ahead, what is going to have to happen for our producers to see prices go higher?
I mean, to me, I feel like it is something that arises. I think it's something that comes. I think we've got to both see a natural belief or a feeling that we are going to start to decline in yield from that 181. I think most folks are kind of there in that mindset. But like I said, the headline driven, I'm going to call them headline driven algo traders, like the ones that, and I'm not trying to lump all of these people into just one category, but you have a large group of participants right now that are just really looking at headlines, at balance sheets, at things like that. And so to me, I think if we start to kind of recognize the fact that, A, you know, we have a real potential of seeing carryout start to really drop in new crop. You know, there was talk that we're going to be 2.5, 2.6. Now we're looking at a 2.1, 2.2. You know, and if you were to look at, you know, the export pace, the ethanol pace, and then see a bit of a reduction in yield just down to something more fitting to maybe a less than stellar production season, that 176, 177, all of a sudden our carryout is at 1.7 without China even coming in. And so I think that there are a lot of things that we have to really pay attention to that folks aren't right now. The drought in China, the situation that you're seeing in India is something that cannot be ignored, in my opinion, with billions of people. You've got Southern Russia and Eastern Ukraine with their worst NDVI data in 20 years. I don't know what it takes to get traders to pay attention to it, but I feel like there's enough happening right now that eventually we're going to wake up one day and folks are going to be like, wait a minute, global feed grains, global grains overall with wheat included, you know, we're starting to see a pretty big decline. And this idea that we have more than enough supply is still valid, but it's not a guarantee just yet. And so I feel like as we work our way into July and start to see potentially some more heat develop as we get into pollination and see some of these other issues develop around the world, then we start to see traders pay attention and perhaps see this change in what has been the recent trend.
Well, as you mentioned global weather, I want to circle back around to that, Angie. But first, let's talk exports, because I know that's something you and Carl are really focused on watching as a key driver for the markets. We saw this week COFCO pulled out of a facility here in the United States. We saw weekly export sales. Give us kind of that 10,000 foot view. Where are we at as far as export pace and picture is concerned?
Yeah, I think I'm kind of an outlier right now. I'm one of those folks that is not going to sit here and say we absolutely have to be panicked about the new crop bean export picture. We're a million metric tons behind where we were a year ago at this time, and that pace was exceptionally slow last year and worrisome. So it's not something that we can ignore. But when talking about COFCO and that export facility, they pulled out or basically did a swap with Growmark, where they pulled out of or gave up the ownership of a Chicago-based warehouse that's going to allow Growmark to tap more into the Great Lakes and some of these Ontario locations, which they do. They've got Great Lakes Grain and some other folks in Canada that they work with, so it fits in nicely with them. But it gives COFCO full ownership of a facility, a large transloading export facility in St. Louis. So a lot of folks don't really realize that COFCO has had a pretty large presence in the market. They work very closely with the Illinois-based co-op of Growmark. A lot of folks know them as FS or other elevator locations, you know, around the country. And so COFCO is kind of embedded into our market structure. And that I'm not saying that from any sort of, is it bad? Is it good? Is it whatever? But I do think we have to take into consideration over the last couple of years, we've seen them take advantage of a loophole that allows them not to report export sales until they're priced or until they're loaded on the boat. We've seen that. We've heard lots of rumors of this business getting done, that business getting done, and then it takes days, weeks, months later. I've talked to Seth Myers with the head of the World Agricultural Outlook Board about it. He has reached out to folks within the USDA. They're aware there is an issue there, but they don't know how to solve it. And so to me, I think when it comes down to it from an exportable standpoint or an export sales standpoint, we have to look more to what's going on in the cash market, more to what's happening in spreads action and some of these other things to give us an indication of what's really happening there. There's no signs and basis right now that there's a big book of business that's getting put on. But I think we have to be careful to assume just because there's not an announced export sale doesn't mean that they don't already have access to all of these supplies that they can choose what to do with later. So if the market structure changes and it works to ship those bushels that they're owning in St. Louis into China, they're going to, and it's going to be something that we'll get, you know, a string of announcements day after day or something like that, like we saw with corn a few years back, or we saw with soybeans last year. And so it's something to watch. It's something to pay attention to and just something I have in the back of my mind. So I'm not getting too worked up about it. I mean, if anything, looking at the export sales pace for wheat being ahead of normal is pretty decent. And the corn export sales pace isn't anything that's terrible either. It's pretty well in line with last year when looking at new crop.
Well, that is a little bit of good news. Some silver lining at the end of that. Appreciate that. But yeah. I'm going to take Delaney's tee up and ask you about weather around the country, around the world, especially South America.
Yeah. South American weather at this point is kind of a non-issue to a certain extent. Although it is something that I am watching simply because the drier center of the country, you've seen, you know, the monsoonal flow stopped earlier than normal. You've seen a lot more in the way of higher temperatures than what you've seen. And so that is impacting the river levels that head into the Amazon, which would impact the northern ports. And so for the most part right now, South American weather is not something that I'm paying too close of attention to. For at least another 3 months, we get to the tail end, probably 2.5 months, let's say. First part of September, middle part of September, I'm going to start to pay attention. And the fact that they've brought La Nina back into the forecast for this fall is something that really has me nervous. I feel like it's something we have to pay attention to. It causes a lot of droughts in many times in central parts of Brazil or other areas. You know, that was part of where we saw the production issues kind of arise is from La Nina. But in the meantime, the biggest thing that I'm paying attention to in Brazil is the river levels, because I feel like we're seeing the U.S., the Mississippi River and the Panama Canal is getting back to where we can be competitive using those freight avenues. And now Brazil's going to run into issues with trying to get their corn moved into northern ports. They probably are going to have to look at using truck. So that's something that is huge to me that has my attention. We mentioned the China drought in northern portions of the country. 1/3 of China's major corn producing areas are under drought right now, with some of those areas seeing less than 70% of normal rainfall since the 1st of May. A lot of people will say, oh, they're irrigated. It's nothing to worry about. They're having issues accessing wells. And basically their irrigation per Cetonia Consulting, who's a China-based analytical group, is folks out there with hoses standing over crop like you would water a garden. Not the most efficient. It's not a center pivot. It's not something like that. Not to mention, like I said, you've got the Russian-Ukraine situation. We've had too much moisture in Western Europe where it's damaging French wheat quality and slowed their corn plantings. I mean, you've got India. At this point in time, it's easier to say who isn't having weather issues. And I think that might be like Central Iowa.
Oh, and that's about we've had plenty of rain and we've got plenty of ponds here in Central Iowa.
Maybe it's South Central Iowa. I'm not sure, but there's a spot in there somewhere that's sitting really great, yeah. And I'm happy for it.
Angie, I want to unpack the Black Sea, Russia, Ukraine area just a little bit more. you know, we're watching that area pretty closely. They've had a lot of drought. They've had a lot of devastation there. Production cuts potentially coming. Mm-hmm. Has that story fully played out yet for the wheat market?
No, absolutely not. The problem that the wheat market ran into is a wall of natural selling. And so I think one of the things that we have to really be aware of in agriculture and in the markets is the presence of those natural sellers and natural buyers, right? So natural selling is a farmer. And when you run into natural selling, that's mostly at harvest time, especially in wheat. Most farmers don't sit and hold on to wheat around the world that comes into the market. There's not a lot of places for it to go. And honestly, holding on to wheat is just, it's a fun game to play on, not if it goes out of condition, but when. And so, you know, one of the things that you're seeing right now is just a plentiful supply of grain. We have higher than normal amounts of old crop supplies on hand, and we're going to have a large influx of new crop coming in through harvest. And so really what you've run into, like I said, is this wall of natural selling. It's put pressure. On top of that, you've seen Matif wheat fall off. The speculators have kind of jumped out of that. And we've jumped out of, you know, the speculators have jumped out of U.S. wheat futures. They've just fallen out of love with agricultural commodities. One of the problems that we have right now was the end user is not moved. The end user is not necessarily engaged. They seem to have learned how to cover a good amount of their futures risk via options during the last run-up and some of the other things that they had, which leaves them with less exposure when spreads get crazy or if anything like that tends to happen. And so right now, a lot of folks around the world are just like, where is the end user? Q3 coverage is very minimal. Q4 coverage is even less. And so we're waiting to see that natural buyer return. And in the meantime, you're just being overwhelmed with a load of natural selling via harvest. And so the buyer is not wrong, but the buyer may be finding themselves soon out of position, especially if we get into Russia and we start to see that their harvest is less than expected. You can overweight your welcome as an end user for sure. And there are a lot of folks right now that are thinking you could see end users overweight their welcome and find themselves having to chase the market higher. But that's going to be something that happens after we work our way through harvest pressure and the wheat is put away.
Yeah, I think she's got a really good pulse on things. So I'm curious, Angie, what other headlines have you been paying attention to or watching out for that our listeners might be keen to know?
Oh, gosh, it's like, what am I not? I mean, I think when it comes down to it, I think the geopolitical situation around the world is something to pay attention to in a major way. Mostly right now, what I'm watching is Brazil and Argentina, simply because they're our biggest competitors when it comes to corn and soybean exports. The biggest thing right now in Brazil that's really interesting is that they've brought in President Lula, right? He's been reelected. There's a whole host of things in Brazil's history that are super, like, just fun to dig into sometimes. But the central bank, the leader of the central bank, is a holdover from their former president, and they do not get along. Mm-hmm. And so you saw Lula basically take legal action against their central bank head. So that'd be like Biden suing Powell. Just absolutely crazy going on there. And so you've seen the real, you know, the budget shortfall in Brazil is estimated to be like $25 billion. They introduced a new tax plan a while back that would have closed about a $5 billion loophole that they discovered that agricultural companies are taking advantage of. Basically, they're getting credits on a tax they would never pay anyway. And so they're getting this money. They had tried to take it away from them. The ag companies were like, no way, Jose, like not happening. And so they closed that loophole, and now their financial ministers threatened to quit. Like, it's a whole bunch of, like, Real Housewives style economic drama. And as a result, you know, you're seeing the real weaken, which in history would say that the farmer becomes a more aggressive seller and that they're able to export more. We are seeing the latter. We have seen them really increase their bean export offers. Basis has fallen off. But the farmer in Brazil is starting to take an approach to the market similar to what you would see out of Argentina. They're holding on to bushels as a hedge against inflation. And so they're not aggressively selling into the market at all. Couple that with Argentina, they already know not to sell because they need to hedge against inflation. Not to mention you've taught them over the last couple of years, I say you, the government, has taught them over the last couple of years that if they wait, they can get a soy dollar, a corn dollar, some sort of incentive that'll provide them more money than just selling into the marketplace. And so as a result, because of these developments that we've seen, this sort of meddling in the market structure in South America, the Brazilian and South and Argentinian farmer are not going to sell as aggressively as what a lot of folks thought they would. That's part of the reason you've seen people get caught in meal. You've seen that soybean inverse on the front end. There's a lot of things happening where just because the grain is there doesn't mean it's making its way to the pipeline as it should. And so that's something to watch, you know, really, really closely, in my opinion, just how the economy and the political developments in each country impact agriculture.
Well, Angie, we certainly appreciate you hopping on with us today. We want to thank you again for your time. If our listeners would like to check you out, what's the best place to do to go find more information?
Yeah, you can find us. You can check out the website at consciousag.net, or you can find me on Twitter or TikTok at Goddess of Grain.
Perfect. Angie, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
Well, it's always great to bring friends back to the podcast. We appreciate your feedback, listeners, for that. And it was a great conversation with Angie. As always, you can find her on X at Goddess of Grain. So thanks again for hanging out with us. We appreciate that feedback. And I still can't get past it being morning.
I know. But I want to also mention, Tanner, next week you're going to have a new co-host sitting in this chair hot seat next to you. So be welcoming on our summer intern.
And you made it easy on me that it's also another Delaney. So I could just say Delaney as if you are here or were here and not sound like a fool.
Well, we're excited to introduce her to all of our listeners next week. Tanner, be easy on her, okay?
I will. Right. Maybe I'll give her the week off and let her warm up to a week later. But nonetheless, listeners, thanks for hanging out with us. Follow us on social media or wherever you listen to this. Leave us a review and hit the 5 stars. Appreciate it a lot. But what do you say, Delaney? Is it time to let them go?
Let's let them go.